live on location. It's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
Across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Todd Albaugh. Glad to be here live in Chicago for the Democratic National Convention. It is Thursday, August 22nd, 2022. It is a great day to be a Wisconsinite. Glad to be with you again, once again, from the Democratic National Convention. Doing yeoman's work back at the world headquarters high atop State Street, a block off the Capitol Square, filling in for Mr. Zommers, who will be with us this evening. A special hour-long show, 6 until 7, News Director Terry Bell, myself, and a cast of thousands getting you ready for the big speeches tonight. And so filling in once again for the morning show, John and Gordy at WMDX, the wonderful, the talented, a graduate of the University of Wisconsin-Madison, Sam Davison. Samuel, how are you today?
I'm doing well. Thanks, Todd.
Now, I've never called you that before, actually. Does anybody ever call you Samuel, like your mom when she gets angry?
Yeah, I was going to say only when my mom is mad at me.
Well, nobody's mad at you, Sam. In fact, we love having you here.
You're
fantastic. So thanks for doing great work back in Madison. How are things back at the old world headquarters? It's sunny, it's beautiful, and Chi-Town.
Oh, it's looking great. It's looking great here.
Nice and sunny. We'll be anxious to get back there next week. By the way, a programming note, tomorrow we are going to be cleaning things up here. Lots of cleanup that happens after these things. So I'll be helping our wonderful engineering crew clean things up here and get back to Madison. But we bring on our co-host for the week, the wonderful and talented in his own right, and dressed down a little bit from yesterday, the like myself, a former Republican, now a senior advisor at the Lincoln Project, Trigvi Olson. Trigvi, you're heading back to D.C., after the show today,
be telling people my travel.
Sorry. Well, the point is, you're co-hosting the show. You're hosting the show for me tomorrow.
I am co-hosting the show for you.
What am I supposed
listeners,
to say?
Listeners are the trepidation has already started, Todd. We're supposed to surprise them. No one will be tuning in.
All right.
No, maybe on the app.
We'll edit all that out when it replays. Right. Don't worry. He's here all week, folks.
I hope everybody will join while I am trying to stand in for Todd.
You'll be fantastic. We appreciate it. More importantly, joining us here at the desk, really excited to have our first guest here on the show today. She is a great reporter, an award-winning reporter. She's been with great publications such as Politico, The Atlantic, and Time Magazine. She is currently the senior political correspondent for The Wall Street Journal and author of a 2020 biography on Speaker Nancy Pelosi. Molly Ball, welcome to the program. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, it's fantastic. I know you've known Trigvi for quite a while, and when he said, hey, would you want to have Molly Ball on? I said, would I? I mean, come on. Who said? No, Trigvi. We're all booked up. I mean, come on.
The last political convention I saw Trigvi at was a Republican convention.
That's true.
So how things have changed.
Right. We had Bill McCoshin on yesterday, Tommy Thompson's former chief of staff, and we said the three of us being in a Democratic, if you would have asked us 20 years ago, would we ever be in a National Democratic Convention? We would have laughed at you. But as you say, how things change. Talk about that for a minute. You've covered politics on the Hill and across the country for a long time. We'll just start this one. How does this convention here in Chicago, just as a reporter, what's the feel, what's the differentiation between what it felt like in Milwaukee?
It's interesting because they've both been very happy conventions, but in different ways, right? And there were definitely good vibes in Milwaukee. I mean, that was at a time when Joe Biden was still on the ticket, and they were talking about a Trump landslide and states like Minnesota being in play, and so it was it was right in the wake of the assassination attempt, so there was this feeling of like blessedness and spirituality and almost a sort of dazed feeling. This is also a convention that comes at a fascinating moment for the party when things have changed abruptly. Mm-hmm. And when the party feels happy in a way that they didn't necessarily anticipate going into it. It's packed in there. I have to think that they planned for a much smaller convention than they end up getting, mm-hmm. because when the ticket mm-hmm. changed, a lot of people got excited and decided they wanted to be here. But this excitement is less that sort of feeling of, we've been ordained by God, and more tinged with a little bit of apprehension, almost dread. There's an anxiety to it. And you hear speaker after speaker admonishing the crowd. We can't take anything for granted. You know, Tim Walz saying last night, we're down by a field goal. Mm-hmm. Everybody is very careful. Perhaps, you know, the last in-person convention was 2016 when they thought they were on track for victory and that didn't happen. So there's a real consciousness that there's a lot of work still to be done, and that as happy as everybody is to be here together and be celebrating this new exciting ticket that everyone's very excited about, that they can't take anything for granted.
Let's go back just for a second, step away from politics. I'm always, people, I have friends say, Todd, you're a media guy who's fascinated by media, and they're absolutely right about that. I've read your stuff for a long time. Great work. Tell folks that might not be familiar with some of your writing where you grew up and kind of how you got into the business of journalism. It's a fascinating story.
Sure. I don't know how fascinating it is. I was just a kid who loved to read. I'm from out west. I was born, although my parents actually met at the University of Wisconsin-Madison.
Really?
They were both in grad school there, and that is how they met.
You and Liz Cheney. How about that?
I forgot we had that in common. But
you can use that the next time.
Next time I see her, I'll mention that.
You should.
I grew up in mostly Idaho and Colorado, and that's where my family still is. But I've moved around a lot. I spent a couple years abroad in Cambodia. Always liked to write and wasn't any good at making stuff up. And grew up with no TV because my parents were Pinco College professors. So all I ever did was read. And so I think I was sort of destined to become a writer. And I worked for my high school newspaper and my college newspaper, and it's the only thing I know how to do.
Yeah.
Trivia.
Oh, well, yeah, I did win $100,000 on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, that's how I paid off my student loans.
With Regis?
Meredith. So
with
this
Meredith.
Was in 2007. Yep.
Oh,
yep.
My gosh. Look at that. Not bad at all.
Yeah.
Not bad at all.
And, first time Molly and I met was in New Hampshire during it was like some event that they had for the media in each of the campaigns.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I thought it was a Rand thing.
Yeah, it was. Well, no, it was the thing that Kellyanne Conway and Ginsburg, we were all there, and Microsoft had hosted it. And
really?
I remember you saying that about Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, and I'm like, who's this lady who is at the Nevada, at the Vegas, who's now at Politico, who won? Like, I don't think I want to try and drop any facts that are a little close to the edge with
Trini, describe for a minute, because again, for those who might know, a former Republican like myself, but have worked at much higher levels, helped run McConnell World for a while and helped run John McCain World, the presidential campaign in 08. Talk about this relationship, almost a symbiotic relationship between a national press person and a national political operative. This whole thing of how you communicate, respect one another, it's a dance that I think a lot of people just never get to peek inside and hear about.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing about Molly is not only is she one of the smartest reporters I know, she's just like one of the smartest people I know. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, like...
You're making me sound like kind of a jerk.
No, I'm not. I'm not at all. I don't want to be into it. I mean that as a huge compliment.
Thank you.
But I would return
the favor. You know, I think, you know, as reporters, obviously you want to cultivate a wide array of sources. Yeah. You want to know as many people as possible, have a Rolodex where you can call people up and get gossip, get intel, you know, get access to the principal if that's what you're looking for. But the people that you gravitate to and end up going back to over and over the years are the people that you just get along with as humans, the people that you feel like, again, that you respect their intelligence, you respect their opinions, you're interested in what they have to say. There's certainly a lot of people, particularly on the comms end of the game, who just want to, you know, sort of give you a canned quote or who are spinning you all the time. And so the people that I come back to as sources are the people that I know I can trust to be honest with me and tell me what's really going on, maybe not on the record. But I
was just going to say, not to interrupt, but I'm just going to say, is this real? Because you see it on West Wing or whatever, but I mean, isn't this real where you may get a call, Molly, as a national reporter from somebody like Trigvy in a presidential campaign, they say, look, I'm going to tell you this off the record. You can't use this, but here's what you can use. And Trigvy, you're trusting that she's going to keep her word or any reporter. And those are the relationships that kind of build on the trust, right?
Yeah. So, well, what I would tell you is, so like in Molly's story that she just said about Pelosi. I never go on the record, and it's just sort of a rule. That isn't true. On rare occasions, I will go on the record.
You're on the record right now.
I am on the record
you
right
come
now.
On once a week
but
with
not,
us.
No, I, well, yes. I, other than doing this radio show, actually, you made that joke when I asked you if you'd come on. But it is true. I am on the record when I'm on the radio show. But I view this
but national
a little different.
Press.
But yeah, exactly. And but it has to be the right reporter, and it has to be like I there's a level of trust. And you know, Molly is a professional, and we worked together a long time, and I felt like I needed to say what I said on the record. But I mean, I think as a reporter, I guess I've never asked a reporter like this. Like, people, does it bother you that I have a rule of usually not going on the record? It kind of means mostly because I just don't feel like I don't want to waste your time with my takes on most things. I'm like.
No, like
there's
I
a
said,
lot of people who give takes on anything
because
they want to read their name, right? Like in the
sure,
paper.
And those are usually not your best sources, right? Right. Because that's not what I want. What I want right. is to figure out the truth so I can tell it to my readers. That's ultimately what I'm doing here. Is I'm trying to help people understand politics, and I'm trying to say things that are true, that are not just the conventional wisdom, that are original in some way. And you know, to broaden it a little bit, we hear a lot about trust in media and how so many people feel that they can't trust what they see or hear on the news, and we see that in, you know, the declining audiences and approval ratings and so on. And I really feel that trust is something you have to earn. And I started my career covering politics as a local reporter, as Trigby was saying. I was the political reporter for the Las Vegas Review-Journal, the largest newspaper in Nevada. In 2008, you know, they started having the early caucus, and they were a swing state in the general election. So you get a lot of attention from the candidates in that situation. But you also, as a local reporter, you're part of the community. You run into your sources and your audience members at the grocery store and the gas station. And so you have to prove day in and day out with every story that you do that they can trust you, that you are not, you know, spinning or shilling for anyone, that you're fair to everyone. And that, to me, is how you do this job.
Yeah.
We're going to come back and talk about this story that Molly Ball wrote today in the Wall Street Journal about Nancy Pelosi. I think that a lot of people have kind of forgotten that this joyous warrior, this joyous convention might not have never, ever happened if it hadn't been for somebody like Nancy Pelosi. How much did Pelosi have involvement in getting Joe Biden to step aside? We'll ask Molly Ball, who literally wrote the book of the former House Speaker. Trigby Olson, Molly Ball, come on back. It's the All Ball Show for a Thursday on the Civic Media Radio Network. Wherever it may lead, and having fun doing it. Welcome back to the Tyler Ball Show, live in Chicago at the Democratic National Convention on the Civic Media Radio Network. Beautiful bump shop for those watching on the stream. Our chief engineer, Corey Hartman, showing us what it looks like just a few yards away inside here at the United Center, where tonight Kamala Harris will give her official acceptance speech for the Democratic nomination for President of the United States. Molly Ball, the senior political correspondent for the Wall Street Journal, joins us here, a very special guest, along with Trigby Olson, senior advisor to the Lincoln Project. Molly, you wrote this book, a biography on House Speaker, now Emeritus, still Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi in 2020. You know her better than most people. You wrote a story today in the Wall Street Journal. Summarize that a little bit, and let's get into this.
Well, the headline on the story is, "Upbeat Democratic Convention Has Nancy Pelosi to Thank." So that's the gist of it. She's the reason that the Democrats are having such a happy convention. She, I think, more than anyone, aside from Joe Biden himself, is responsible for the change in the top of the ticket that has so reset and reoriented this entire presidential race. And what I have learned about Nancy Pelosi from covering her for so many years and writing about her decades-long career is that she is a person that when she feels there's something that has to be done, she takes matters into her own hands. She doesn't wait for someone else to do it, and she doesn't duck that responsibility, even if it's going to be difficult for her or for other people involved.
Trigvy and I have been around a long time. Trigvy more than I, in terms of like, well, not age. We're the same age, basically. I didn't mean that's a slight. I'm sorry. But what I meant was, I mean, you've been around the Hill. I mean, I worked for one member of Congress. You've been around the presidential campaigns. You worked in McConnell world, for goodness sake. The point is that you have, I'll call them kind of, you know, JV, no offense to JD Vance, JV politicians who kind of, you know, go on Fox News and yell and scream, or maybe even on MSNBC and act like politicians. But the real people with power in D.C. are those who know how to use a scalpel very carefully. I would put Speaker Pelosi in that category. Is that fair?
Nancy Pelosi's favorite word is leverage. And power is a close second, right? The book that she just wrote that's on the bestseller list right now is called The Art of Power, which I think tells you a lot about how her sort of orientation. And her previous book was called Know Your Power. So I think a lot of people, ironically, in politics, especially women, I think, are uncomfortable being seen using power. Mm-hmm. And she has never been uncomfortable with power. She has never been uncomfortable using her leverage. And she always says, you have to take a punch, you have to throw a punch for the children. It's always for the children. Right, that is her, you know, that she's always said that that was her guiding light. But isn't that a funny juxtaposition? Is she someone who's willing to do the bruising, potentially violent blocking and tackling, but it's always for the cause. It's never about her, and it's never personal. And it's a big contrast to Joe Biden's school of politics, right, which is intensely personal, and where we saw in this past episode that he had to get over his own ego. She's someone who, I'm not going to say she doesn't have an ego. Everybody does. But she's taken a lot of punches over the course of her career. She's been brutally unpopular, polarizing. She's had hundreds of millions of TV ads where far from her district, where she was the one who was being attacked because she was seen as such a negative for the Democrats, and she lets it all roll off her. She doesn't let it get to her. It's never personal for her, and it was the same thing with this decision with Joe Biden, and I spoke to her about it for this piece, and that was basically what she said. What she said, I love Joe Biden very much. I have great affection for him, but this was not about him. This was about the campaign, and this was about saving our democracy.
She has said on...
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you wrote the biography on her. Like, what do you think her parents, and particularly, and I ask this as a girl dad, like, what is it about her relationship with her father specifically that helped have her grow up and be that way? Because, I mean, because I'd like to apply that. I hope my daughters are like that.
So clearly you haven't read the book, at least recently, because Nancy Pelosi's comes from a political family.
I skipped the whole part of her growing up.
That's okay.
When I read political books, I only read
the first chapter. But the first chapter is about her mother, because a lot of people have attributed Nancy Pelosi's political career, and particularly her strategic brain, to her father. He was a member of Congress when she was born. Yeah. He was the mayor of Baltimore most of the time when she was growing up. So people look at her and say, oh, you're Tommy D'Alessandro's daughter. That's why you got where you are. And she would always say, including when I have spoken to her about her childhood, that she wishes people would pay more attention to her mother. Now, her mother was what you might call a ball buster. She was a tough political organizer. She was a no-nonsense Italian lady who really ran the whole household and was really the political brain behind her husband's campaigns at a time when women couldn't be the one out front. And I think and so the way that Nancy Pelosi's book starts is very funny. She talks about when she first got to Congress and people said, your parents must be so proud. And she said, what are you talking about? My parents didn't want me to do this. They wanted me to be a nun.
Wow.
She, she had five brothers, and she was the youngest and the only girl.
Right.
And in those days, she's born in 1940. No one ever expected her to have a political career. Her brothers were the ones who were groomed for that. And she was the one who, if they had any aspiration for her, it was either to be a wife and mother or to be a nun.
Interesting.
I want to get to this. Only about 3 minutes left here. But Nancy Pelosi said, I'm paraphrasing on the record, that she took calls, but she didn't make any calls in this whole thing to get Biden to reconsider or come to his own decision. But in your reporting, Molly Ball, is it pretty apparent that it was Nancy Pelosi who brought the big guns and said, Mr. President, this isn't happening?
Yes, and there's a reason for that. And so, yes, she tries to draw this very fine distinction, and you can understand why, right? She wants to downplay her role in this because she wants it to be seen as Joe Biden's decision. She doesn't like this narrative that she's this, you know, manipulative figure behind the scenes who's making all this happen, even if it's true. But she was, you know, I've spoken to a lot of Democratic lawmakers who were involved in this whole episode, and they said it was very clear that she was a driving force here. And the reason for that is she was in a unique position as a senior figure in the party who was unencumbered by leadership responsibilities. Mm-hmm. And she stepped down as speaker in 2022. You know, Hakeem Jeffries, Chuck Schumer, they've got to represent all of their members. And there was a wide array of opinions within those Democratic caucuses about what Joe Biden should do in the wake of the June 27th debate. She could sort of freelance, but she also knows everyone. And she knows all the donors, and she knows all the power brokers. And unlike maybe the Obamas or the Clintons, she doesn't have some of the bad blood with the Bidens. So she was, and she's 84 years old, so she can go to him as a fellow old person who has given up power herself and talk about this dynamic.
And true or untrue in your reporting, it was Nancy Pelosi that made Joe Biden realize that his own staff wasn't sharing correct information with him.
Correct. She was the one who confronted him with the data and pierced his bubble, right? Because there, he was surrounded by people who weren't necessarily
and called them out.
And called them out, apparently. And as much as Joe Biden gets credit, and I think he should, in my personal opinion, for doing the George Washington stepping aside, history may look back and say it was Nancy Pelosi who did what the Republicans couldn't do to go to their nominee and say it's not happening. Nancy Pelosi may be the one who is most responsible for saving democracy. Is that a fair statement?
Well, this is the point that Trigby made in what I quoted him saying in my article, right, is that there have been, for the past 9 years, there have been, as you very well know, a lot of Republicans who wring their hands about Trump and wish someone else would do something about it. Nancy Pelosi took matters into her own hands.
Molly Ball, senior political correspondent at the Wall Street Journal, thank you so much. Please come on back. We love you so much. We love all your reporting.
Trigby
Olson, back on the other side. Our old friend Kristen Bryan stops by. It's a Tom Ball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Wherever it may lead, and having fun doing it. Welcome back to the All Ball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. We are here in Chicago, in the United Center for the Democratic National Convention. Corey Hartman continues to bring us the splendor of the United Center, that statue for those watching the stream. Michael Jordan, MJ. That was one of the first things. There it is, Trigby. Trigby said, I got to get a picture of this. And
yeah.
We were setting up. It was Casper and Corey and I setting stuff up on Friday. There were a couple of tourists outside. They're like, can we see the MJ statue? We're like, we're sorry, it's inside and we can't let you in. So it's iconic. It's iconic, right? I mean, there's a rich history in Chicago. And our very own Brian Kelly, co-host of the Maggie Dawn Show every afternoon, has been giving us a flavor. Brian Kelly was in Chicago. You were on the town last night.
Yes, we had a great time. Ended up going to a Lettuce Entertain You restaurant.
Oh, nice.
Cafe Babariba, little
I just like hearing him say that.
It's Cafe Babariba. Yeah. It was fantastic. We had Spanish tapas. I had proper paella. Like proper paella.
Nice.
And some amazing sangria, some really good friends. And then I went out to Green Mill. And it was really cool because Green Mill is an old Capone place, you know. They play live jazz every night. But it's all cash and everything. Had some martinis, took some cool pictures. But the bartenders were like, so you're at the DNC? Tell me all about it. Because
yeah.
They had the speeches up. And the bartenders were watching the speeches with closed captioning. And some of them were tearing up. Some were excited. One of them was from Minnesota, so she's really excited about that. And had a great time. It was really, really cool. And they were also enthusiastic and excited, too. They were just like, that's you're great. At the DNC. Let me tell me everything.
That's awesome. Well, I'm glad to see that's the difference, Trigby, between a Chicagoan who knows what the heck's going on, a man about town, and me. I just went back and sat on my well-worn couch at the hotel, ate some warmed-up pizza, some cheap wine, and watched the DNC. So that was my exciting night last night. Trigby Olson, senior advisor at the Lincoln Project, joins us. Molly Ball, thanks for helping us. That what a get.
You should ask her. Yeah, phenomenal.
I mean, and I think that.
Well, I mean, there's a reason. Like, she has one of the preeminent
you know, she's the top political reporter at the Wall Street Journal.
Right.
Like, that's like, it's like being the left tackle for the Green Bay Packers in journalism.
Talk
right?
to people about your clip, your outtake of that story, Trigvy, because I think this is an under, you know, thanks to Molly Ball for doing it, but yeah. up until then, it's an underreported story so far at this convention that all this joy, the excitement, the thrill of this convention may never have happened had it not been for Nancy Pelosi.
Yeah, I mean, that was the gist of the story. And you know, you were asking, and I think it's a good question, probably isn't talked about enough, right? And so sometimes it's tried to be made scandalous, particularly on the right, that reporters and operatives talk all the time. And truth of the matter is, all the MAGA ones talk to reporters all the time, too, right? Like, you know, but the and business people too, like, you know, right. somebody like Molly's interviewed Elon Musk and Nancy Pelosi and George W. Bush. And like, yeah. I got to know her when she was doing stuff with on McConnell and Rand Paul. Right. Like, so, but, you know, she had called because she's like, I'm doing the story on Pelosi. And I was thinking about something that you had said one time about how Pelosi, you know, was willing to do what McConnell and other Republicans that you've said you've been disappointed with, and just off the record as we're talking. And I thought, yeah, I need to come out and say it. And you know, the Wall Street Journal is a good place to say it. And it's a reporter where there's a long history of trust back and forth. So it just seemed like the right, that it needed to be said, that Nancy Pelosi was willing to put cause greater than self, as John McCain would say, and Mitch McConnell wasn't going to do that, and Mitch McConnell will forever be judged for that decision, as will Nancy Pelosi. And I think history is going to judge her extraordinarily well, unfortunately, and it pains me deeply that I believe that will be the scarlet letter on Mitch McConnell for those of us who respected a lot of the things that he did.
Mm-hmm.
I know we have a lot of listeners who are like, oh my God, Mitch McConnell.
Right.
It's like, you know, even Darth Vader is iconic.
So. 855-752-4842. 855-752-4842.
He did turn to the light side out at the end.
So there you go. Think about it.
Maybe there'll be Ewoks at Mitch McConnell's funeral.
Ah,
at some
point.
There
might. Sure. Jabba the Hutt.
All right. 855-752-4842 if you'd like to weigh in.
At least you won't be a lounge jack like Scott Walker.
Exactly. Let's talk a little bit about what happened last night. Governor Tim Walz from Minnesota, our next-door neighbor to Wisconsin, of course. It was his night, his speech. And, I mean, you had Oprah there. I thought Oprah was fantastic last night. I did. I love Oprah.
No.
But you know what? Somebody, one of my friends, my
Hulk
sister.
Hulk Hogan or Oprah. Right? Like, really?
One of my friends tweeted me and said, oh, my God, Oprah and Pete Buttigieg in one night? Todd, are you okay? I said, I'm a little verklempt. Talk amongst yourselves. I mean, it was great.
Yeah.
But it belonged to Pete Buttigieg and or Tim Walz.
None of them can give a speech like Michelle Obama.
No, they can't. No, of course not.
Like, that lady is gifted.
She is. But I thought Tim Walz,
even more so than her husband, in a way.
Yeah. Oh yeah. To connect with people like that, right?
Yeah. It was incredible.
But I want to get Sam back at home. Let's pull up this cut one here. This is Minnesota Governor Tim Walz last night. Walz on his on the dais and on the speech last night, talking about a certain segment of the population we should never underestimate. Here is Governor Walz.
So there I was, a 40-something high school teacher with little kids, zero political experience, and no money, running in a deep red district. But you know what? Never underestimate a public school teacher. Never. I represented my neighbors in Congress for 12 years, and I learned an awful lot. I learned how to work across the aisle on issues like growing the rural economies and taking care of veterans. And I learned how to compromise without compromising my values. Then I came back to serve as governor, and we got right to work making a difference in our neighbors' lives. We cut taxes for the middle class. We passed paid family and medical leave. We invested in fighting crime and affordable housing. We cut the cost of prescription drugs and helped people escape the kind of medical debt that nearly sank my family. And we made sure that every kid in our state gets breakfast and lunch every day.
That's Governor Tim Walz last night at the Democratic convention there. Somebody on Twitter said this to me last night. I thought it was super funny. If you could, especially when you just listen to the cut and you don't really right. see him. Somebody said it sounds like at any moment he's going to bust into, "So you're not eating cheese in a van down by the rivers." I mean, it's a lot like Matt Foley. It's in the iconic Chris Farley from Madison, Wisconsin.
I don't know that that's probably the analogy that the people running the DNC
no,
convention
I'm sure not.
Want,
but it's kind of funny.
There's a little bit of, you know.
I thought it was funny.
Honestly, though, some of that is Chris Farley is like, you know, the quintessential Midwest guy.
Exactly.
So is Tim Walz. Right. So, yeah, there is a little bit of that.
But he said, I mean, the whole thing about don't
eating beans at a van down by the river.
Right? Don't underestimate public school teachers. I'm the only goofball that did not go into public school education teaching for my family. I know a lot of public school educators, and they just know how to get things done. And again, here's the thing. We talk about this all the time, about as you call him, Derek Van Odwin, Derek Van Horton from the 3rd District back in Wisconsin. Here's a guy who says he was a Navy SEAL. I never take anything away from people that served. Nobody. But here's the thing, whether it was John McCain or John Kerry, when they announced for president or a political career, they had people that served with them in battle, in combat, that stood up and vouched for him. Derek Van Orton has never yet been able to have one other former Navy SEAL vouch for his service and that he was an upstanding guy. Last night, you had Tim Walz's former state championship football team come out mm-hmm. on the stage. I thought it was a great moment.
Yeah, I thought it was good, too. I mean, it was a nice testament to him that he was doing that. And Democrats, you know, Democrats need to be more comfortable with that. I've said that to a lot of people that are running, particularly Democrats in the Midwest, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they want to take the best opportunity that Democrats have in state legislative races in Wisconsin is if they can make the races about the two individuals on the ballot mm-hmm. rather than about people falling into their natural camps, right? Yeah. Kristen Lierley, Rebecca Cook, they're going to need Republicans to vote for them as human beings and as people. And I don't know as much about Cook, but I know in Dr. Lierley's case from talking to her offline after she was on the show, right? Like, she comes from Kakana, and mm-hmm. she has from Kakana, and, you know, a lot of the people she grew up with, they voted for Trump, but they're supporting her. And I'm like, you got to get those people out there saying why, kind of like the way Tim Walz did.
Yeah, absolutely. One more cut, Sam. This is the next one from Walz. And you know he's a school teacher because he tells people like me what to do. He says, here you go. Here are the clips to send to your undecided relatives. Here's Tim Walz last night at the DNC.
So here, this is the part, clip and save it and send it to your undecided relatives so they know. If you're a middle-class family or a family trying to get into the middle class, Kamala Harris is going to cut your taxes. If you're getting squeezed by prescription drug prices, Kamala Harris is going to take on Big Pharma. If you're hoping to buy a home, Kamala Harris is going to help make it more affordable. And no matter who you are, Kamala Harris is going to stand up and fight for your freedom to live the life that you want to lead. Because that's what we want for ourselves, and it's what we want for our neighbors.
Tim Walz last night on the DNC stand, again, Trigby, he talks like our neighbor, right? It's not complicated. It's not big words. He talks like a neighbor we have in Wisconsin.
Well, because he is our neighbor.
Well, that's true.
Literally. No, I mean, I don't think anybody's doubting he's a really good pick. Mm-hmm. He's a really good pick because he brings two things to the table. You know, vice presidential picks don't usually have a lot of impact. And if they're having impact, it's usually in the single state that they're from. Mm-hmm. But the thing with Walz is he has a little bit of that because there's 400,000 people in Wisconsin, including people where I grew up and my buddies, in St. Croix County, for example, who get their media from Twin Cities Television, Twin Cities media sources. So you have that. And then you also have the benefit that he brings a constituency that's demographic in that he is able to speak college-educated Generation X white dude at it very well. And that will have some impact in some of the other places, particularly the Midwest white dude. I think he helps in Michigan and Wisconsin, and that brings something real to the table.
And to your point, and I think somebody, maybe Jake Tapper, was talking about this on CNN yesterday, is that Walz could go to Eau Claire. Walz could go to La Crosse, and just that alone in the
state. Did Tapper cite those two places?
He did, actually. He did his homework, obviously. I was watching it last night, and they were talking about it. Were you feeding him that?
No.
Look, Trigg knows a lot of people. You understand? He talks to a lot of people.
I haven't talked to him directly, but I have talked to some people over there. It's just interesting to me because somebody from that orbit had called and asked for my take. I don't know.
It was he and John King, and they literally circled Eau Claire and circled the map.
Well, here's the reason why. And I said, honestly, like, it's kind of like what Molly and I were talking about. You know, it's just somebody from CNN called up to Banner and was like, what are you thinking? What are you hearing? Which, I honestly, that give and take is important, right? Because if I'm not actually, this is one of the other things. It's like, if I'm the left tackle on the Packers, like, I shouldn't be spending a lot of my time concerning myself with who Jordan loves throwing the ball to.
Right.
So he probably, honestly, if you sit down with the left tackle, he probably doesn't know a lot about why those decisions were made. So that's the benefit of the give and take with the reporters.
We'll come back, actually talk some Packer news. Aaron Rouse was here at the DNC. We'll come on back and talk about it live at the United Center, the Tahlo Ball Show location on the Civic Media Radio Network.
How about that nutty Star Wars bar? Can you forget all the creatures in there? Wars!
Pursuing truth wherever it may lead and having fun doing it. Welcome back to the Tahlo Ball Show, live on location at the Democratic National Convention from the United Center in Chicago, Illinois. Happy to be along with you, Trigg V. Olsen, former Republican like myself, now the senior advisor at the Lincoln Project, along with us, as he has been all week. We appreciate him so much. He'll be guest hosting the show tomorrow, as Todd's going to be helping out with a little cleanup and getting trucking on back to Wisconsin. By the way, a great outtake there, thanks to Mr. Kelly and Sam. A little Bill Murray on the outtake there.
Yeah.
Chicago's own
Bill Murray.
What were you saying about him over the break?
If you've never seen Zombieland, you have to see Zombieland.
Well, no, he's a greater force then.
Oh, he might be a greater force than Chuck Norris.
He might be, especially in Chicago, right?
Chuck Norris is a force, though.
Well, that's true.
Yeah. I don't know. You know who's a force, Todd? Ooh. Oprah Winfrey.
How about her last night?
Incredible.
I mean, that woman is just, talk about, she has more talent in her pinky than I will in my entire life.
I think the thing is, you know, I saw this interview once with her, and she didn't really know what she wanted to do, and she thought to herself, what do I really like to do? And she's like, I like to sit on a couch and talk to people. I wonder how I can make a career out of that. And that's what she did. Like a $1 billion career out of talking to people. Basically liking to talk to people on a couch.
Well, I read an article, and of course, Phil Donahue just died this past week here, passed away. And he was kind of the godfather, if you will, of talk shows, and really became a serious talk person about daytime talk. And Oprah Winfrey, when she started here in Chicago at a local station, and then it got to be syndicated, and she tried to kind of emulate the Jerry Springer style at first, kind of the weird stuff to get the ratings. And I can't remember the exact show. I don't want to make it up. But there was a show that was just over the top, and she said in this interview, she said, it was at that moment where I said, no, I'm not going to spend my life doing that. And I'm going to start doing shows that I want to talk about and things that matter. And if people watch it, great. And if they don't, I don't care because I'm not going to do this. And it was, again, somebody like Nancy Pelosi, somebody like Michelle Obama, someone like Kamala Harris, strong women who just say, I'm not going to go down this lane that's been made for me. I'm going to strike out on my own. And that's what it takes.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's no doubt about that, that she, you know, if you remember, like, you were probably in college at that time. Like, we'd all watched the Robert Downey Jr. show and Jerry Springer and, like, you know, that Rick, they'd all chant because Big Goon guy come out. But her show, like...
If you want to know the truth, I watched Oprah.
You know what? It's funny. You know what? All the college girls watched Oprah, so we all started watching Oprah, too, because then it was like...
I watched The Young and the Restless and Oprah.
That moonlighting... You know, we all watched Days of Our Lives at Eau Claire.
Really?
Yeah,
no,
everybody watched Days of Our Lives.
No, it was Young and the Restless.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Young and the Useless. Anyway, I don't even know where we're going. Oprah. Yeah, so, I don't, you know, Oprah, though, here's the thing. I think Harris, I said this to somebody. I watch Harris, and I think Harris stands on the shoulders. And, like, you know, Trump is trying to play this little black woman thing. There's a racial element to it, but Harris stands on the contribution that people like Oprah, Diana Ross, Beyonce, like there's Aretha Franklin, like slews of strong African-American women who have represented some of the best of what America's supposed to be all about and have helped create that path I don't think most people in America outside of the racists think much of it.
Right. 855-752-4842 if you want to join the conversation. 855-752-4842. On the lighter side, all kinds of celebrities that show up here at these national types of conventions. And Trigvi, of course, by the way, one of the owners of the Green Bay Packers, Trigvi Olsen.
True. Owner.
Owner sitting right here. One of the former Packers.
We own the Bears, so I own two NFL teams. Actually,
by the way, I've said this, the Bears fans down here, very cocky this year. Very, very cocky.
Because they have the new quarterback.
I know. Anyway.
Good luck with that.
A former Packer.
He carries a purse if you watch HBO.
Oh, what's wrong with that? There's nothing wrong with that.
If you're an NFL quarterback.
Former Packers, Aaron Rouse.
Get a backpack.
All right. I've got a broken one. Aaron Rouse is here at the DNC. Aaron Rouse was interviewed. Here's what Aaron Rouse, former Green Bay Packer, had to say at the DNC.
As a former Packer player and a Lambeau Field record holder, I got to make sure I support those who supported me in my time in Green Bay.
Are you being careful not to tell people in Chicago you were on the Packers?
You got to be very careful around here. There's a lot of Bears out here on the loose, by the way. But, you know, this is a great convention as well. And anytime Democrats can get together, we're always going to have a great time.
What do you think about being at this convention and swinging by Wisconsin? You know, this is one of the most critical states. Virginia's
absolutely
a very close state, too. But what do you make of Wisconsin being such a competitive state?
Well, listen, Wisconsin's going to get it done. That's one thing that I know. Democrats are fired up for Harris and Walz, and we're going to do a great job making sure we turn out the vote. We're going to knock doors. And as you can see, we have record numbers of fundraising already. But we got to get it done on November 5th, and Wisconsin's going to do it. It's something we know all too well as cheeseheads.
Did your time in Green Bay have any influence on your interest in politics?
Well, you know, my time in Green Bay and professional athlete in sports has shown me that no matter where you come from, you all have to work together to make sure we can move the team forward. It's about winning, but also it's about making sure you can value those differences. And my time in Green Bay helped me understand that, so I returned home to Virginia, my state where I was born and raised, and became a servant leader.
And what was your favorite thing about your time in Wisconsin?
You got to say the cheese, man. Come on. And my, you know, memorable... I'll never forget Lambeau Leaping. That was the thing, being embraced by, you know, all my Wisconsin, my Packer fans all over, and setting that Lambeau Field record for the longest interception return. Lambeau will always be home for me.
How about that? Aaron Rouse.
He's the longest interception return in Lambeau? How is that possible? George Teague had one that was like 107.
I'm not going to argue. I know Mike Clemens.
Well, no, anyway,
I mean, I don't
it's
know.
Okay.
I'm not going to argue about it. I'm going to walk up to him and say, no, Aaron Rouse, you're wrong.
No.
I mean, come on. I might be an idiot, but I'm no Scott Walker.
Yeah, okay.
I'm not going to be that dumb. I mean, come on. But I thought that was great. It all comes down to cheese.
Very nice,
right?
Mm-hmm. It is.
It all comes down to a little cheese. The Packers are well represented here at Chicago, as are the Bears as well. And here's the thing about the Democratic National Convention so far, a lot of it's just been bringing people together. It doesn't matter who you cheer for sports or where you come from. This ongoing message of unity. And tonight, I think it's going to be spectacular as we have Vice President Kamala Harris. A quick programming note for you. Coming up tonight from 6 until 7 right here on the Civic Media Radio Network, Terry Bell, our news director, and a cast of thousands will recap everything and get ready for tonight. And you can follow all of our election coverage at civicmedia.us. Come on back. It's hour number 2 live on location here from Chicago. It's the Todd Allball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.